On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
I've been into one of these why me kind of things. You know what I'm talking about, where everything that happens, it's like, why is this always happening to me? You know, do you get into that? Like, why me? Why, there's a whole world of people. There's like zillions of people on the planet. Why do these things happen to me? Out of all, who is choosing these horrible things to happen just to me? I think we all get into that every once in a while when we get down upon ourselves, get down. But it's true. I wanted to see this movie, this particular movie, I saw advertisements on television for it, and I really wanted to see this particular movie. And I won't tell you what the movie is because it's none of your business. I really wanted to see this movie. I had a free afternoon, and I love to go to the movies in the afternoon because not a lot of people go in the afternoon, and I don't like crowds because crowds involve other people, and that's where I usually don't do very well, being in the crowds of other people, because the chances of anyone in that crowd being a dickhead are very, very high. So I wanted to see this particular movie. I saw the what they call a trailer, and that's, I don't know why they call it that, but it's an example of what the movie's about. It's usually about a minute long. It looked really good. And by the way, when a movie looks really good in its preview, you've just seen all the good parts of the movie. They don't give a crap if you like the movie or not. All they want to do is get you in the theater, get your money, and then if you don't like it, so what? You already paid the money. We accomplished our goal. So the previews are usually like the best parts of the movie, the most intense, wonderful, clever, funny lines. And then you get into the movie and you watch the movie and go, whoa, oh, I've seen all the good stuff already. This is all crap. They don't care. They don't care. It's all crap left over. They just wanted to get you in the theater. And they did. And then you feel used and abused. Why me? Why me? So I'm all excited. I'm going to see this movie. It's the movie is like 100 minutes long, which exceeds my tolerance by 10 minutes. A really good, tight movie is an hour and a half. Ooh, I love the really good, tight, like, let's like really make this from beginning to end something incredible. That can only be achieved in an hour and a half or less. Anything more than an hour and a half, the director or the writer or whoever is just full of themselves at that point. There is no reason. There is no reason to have a movie really, really long. Some of these 2 hours, 2.5 hour movies, up your ass. What are you trying to do? What are you doing? You're too lazy to edit? Anyway, I go to see this movie that I was really looking forward to. I think I just said that 1,000 times. I get to the movie theater, fine. I pick a seat, I sit in the seat. In this particular movie theater, they have reserved seats now. Everything is reserved. You can't, when you buy the ticket at the counter right out front, they ask you to pick a seat. All of a sudden, this is like reserved seats. Oh my God. So I go in there and I sit down and I'm in a nice seat. And there's 3 or 4 other people in this entire theater in the early afternoon. It's the best time to go to the movies. All the kids are still in school. All those little bumbling little bastards are not around me. So I love it. This guy comes in with his girlfriend, his wife. I don't know. They're like in their 60s, which is a wonderful age. It has nothing to do with it. I'm just telling you. They come in and they sit down right next to me. An entire empty theater. There's about 200 seats in this theater or 100 seats. I don't know. These two people reserve the seats right next to me. So, fine. So, they sit there. Now, I can move to another seat, even though I didn't reserve a different seat, but there's seats left in the theater. I can do that. But I say, no, don't do that. You chose your seat. This is fine. These people didn't know I was going to be sitting here. That's fine. The guy sits down next to me. He smells like a freshly laid turd. Not one that's been sitting there for like half an hour in his pants. I'm talking about one that has been freshly created by his stinky, unusually smelly body. And his wife is sitting next to him, and I kind of leaned forward to look at his wife sitting next to him on the other side, And she doesn't seem to be bothered by this incredible odor of stinkiness. She should have checked to see if her husband had died, because that's what the odor smelled like. Well, of course, I did change my seat at that point. But as I was changing it, this couple looks at me like there's something wrong with me. They're staring at me like, look at him. No, smell you. You're disgusting. See, people that usually smell don't know it. They don't. I've talked to a lot of people who've had garlic. Some people eat garlic by the bulb. You ever, some of these people? Yeah, that's very, very healthy. What I love is I take a garlic bulb and I roast it, and then I peel it and I eat it raw. Well, not raw, but it's roasted garlic. I eat it just by itself. Yeah, I know you do. People five blocks away from you know that you do. You freaking stink, man. You are protruding my space with your odor that could kill a skunk at 50 paces. Brush your teeth. Do something. You could clear out Radio City Music Hall with that breath. Get out of here. But they don't know they stink. That's the point. They have no concept whatsoever. They don't know that they're stinking. They think they're perfectly fine and they're enjoying their garlic bowls. No, you stink. But they don't know, so I can't blame them. Yet I hate their guts because they did that to my atmosphere. So I changed seats in this movie theater and everything's fine. But again, why me? Why of all the... I'm not a very wonderful person. I mean, I am in many regards. I'm more wonderful than you will ever meet. I sound like Trump now, don't I? I am more wonderful person you will ever meet. I am so respectful, sensitive. I am a catch beyond catching. If I were a fish and you caught me, you would not throw me back. You would skin me and fillet me and eat me and say, that is one tasty fish that Van Damme is. You'd love me. You would. But at the same time, I'm rather menacing. I'm tall. I don't smile a lot. I tend to complain about things as a form of conversation. But loving at the same time. An enigma, for sure. So I'm sitting at this bar at this cocktail lounge that I go to every once in a while when I want to get away from society and self-medicate myself. There's nothing wrong with self-medication as long as you don't self-medicate all the time. Just on special occasions. Like weekdays. So I go to this bar, I sit down, I say hello to the bartender. I obviously know the bartender at this point. At this point, we're like, we're buddies. So I sit down. This other guy walks to the bar. There's about 20 seats at the bar. It's a huge bar. I'm the only one there. I'm sitting there. This guy comes in, looks at all the seats at the bar, the other 19 empty seats. He walks in, and he sits next to me. I freak out. And it's not because another human being is sitting next to me, although that is freak-outable material to me. But it's the question, why did you do that? Why did you make the decision to sit right next to me? Am I that lovely? Now, there are various ways to remedy this. One, very similar to the guy in the movie theater, I could just let out a fart. And I can do that any time you want. You don't have to send me an invitation. You don't have to warn me. You don't say, Ron, can you work one up and let me know when you're ready to let it go? I am always cocked and ready to fire. So it's not a big deal for me. I was a colicky baby. I had more gas in me than a Ford F-150. I'm not into cars that much. I don't know what I just said. And a lot of gas in me. So I could have just thrown one of my bombs, and the guy would have definitely gotten up, just like the movie theater situation where I was the victim. But I didn't do that because I have respect. The guy was perfectly nice, perfectly fine. I mean, his butt wasn't up against mine or anything. There was like a space between our two chairs, but I couldn't figure out what. And I wanted to turn to him and say, "Excuse me, I don't know your name. I don't know who you are. I'm just curious. Out of all the seats in this bar, all the empty ones, why did you choose the one that was next to me when you don't even know me? Why would you do something like that?" But I didn't ask him because you're not supposed to. The easier route would be just to fart, but I didn't do that either. The guy at a point got up and went to the bathroom. So now I'm sitting there at the bar by myself. My strange seating partner is in the bathroom, in the men's room. And I call the bartender, a girl, over, and I say, "You know, let me ask you something," because I have a relationship with her. We talk. Bartenders and customers have relationships. They're not sexual in any nature. They're relationships. I don't know what they are. You become pseudo friends. You're not really necessarily friends. You could be, but no one really pursued that. Nobody really cares about that. That wasn't the point of this. The point was self-medication. For me. And for the woman bartender, it was to get as big a tip as possible so that they can pay the bills. I mean, it's a very, very simple setup. So I call her over and I say, "Monica." And she says, "My name is Ellen." I said, "Okay, I'm sorry." I said, "Monica, did you see that? This guy came into the bar and he sat down next to me when he had the choice of all the other seats." And she looked at me. Because bartenders have to always agree somewhat with their clients, otherwise they won't get tipped, their customers. So she says, I know, I saw that. I was so curious." I said, "Yeah, I know." She told me, she says, "Some people like to be near other people. The human being is a member of a pack, a member of a group. A human being likes to be amongst other human beings. They feel more comfortable. They feel more together. They feel more bonded. They like to roam with their own kind. And that's why I think, Ron," my name's not Ron, it's Ellen. She says, "Well, that's why I think, Ron, that this guy sat close to you and next to you, because he was he had an animal instinct of being with his people." And I said, "Well, can I have the check, please?" And she says, "Why?" I says, "I'm getting out of here. I can't do this. I can't do it. These people are on my ass. I don't want people. Look, I didn't choose to be here. I'm glad I'm here, but at the same time, all these other people, that's an imposition to me. I know they roam the earth with me, but so do cockroaches. I don't tend to be friends with them or sit next to them. Let's stop this thing. Let's stop this foolery. I need a t-shirt or a sign that's around my neck saying, you're probably a very nice person. Let's leave it at that. Go somewhere else. I want everybody to know that." Now, let me just explain. I don't really feel like that. That was a bit in order to kill approximately 14 minutes of airtime. I was successful. You apparently are still here. Nobody got hurt. I really like people, but I really don't need them that close to me.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Thank you. Okay, welcome to the program. I know, that was the opening theme 15 minutes into the show. I know what you're going to say, and you said it, I get it. I have a very interesting guest today. He's a lengthy guest. He's lengthy. We're going to talk for a period of time because I find the subject matter interesting, although I have a feeling I may not agree with him on everything that is being said or will be said. He's written a book. It's called Placebomocracy, I believe. I can't pronounce the name of his book. We talk about government, how do we get into this mess with this Trump thing, and why are people the way they are, the way they vote? What happened to this country? Why is Congress so screwed up? I don't care which side you're talking about. What's going on? Why is nothing in government working at all anymore? Why is the guy who said he was going to drain the swamp make the swamp like so deep that we're drowning in it? What's going on with all of that? What happened? Why is this country on such a weird collision course in the minds of the majority of Americans? What's going on? Now, our guest author, it's his opinion. He wrote a book about it. It's topical, so I thought we'd talk to him. Are you ready to do this? This could be fun. All right, we're going to do this. Could you get him on the phone, please? We're going to talk to him on the phone. He's not really here. He's going to be on the phone. I hope everybody can hear this.
You're listening to The Big Show by John Bandan. I wish I could listen to it too, but sometimes he says bad words.
Mark J. Hardwick joins us now. Interesting book that he's put together. It's a classical liberal take on America today. It kind of covers everything that's going on everywhere. And you've actually, I understand, good morning, by the way.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for putting me on.
Oh, hello. Okay. You've coined an interesting a word here that explains what this is. Tell me about that.
Well, placebocracy, basically a combination of placebo, which we all know. I don't know if you remember the song, the pills that mother gave us that didn't do anything at all.
Oh, sure I do, yes.
And krasi, which is basically the Greek word for government. So the notion is simply that we've reached a point in our system where government, rather than solving the problems that we actually have, simply contrives solutions that don't solve any problems. In fact, they contrive solutions to problems that I think in many ways don't exist.
Yeah, it seems it's a culmination of everything at once, both domestically, internationally, the way our country is run, our financial system, the global situation. Just like everything seems to be coming to a head. Is that my imagination, or has everything kind of evolved to that place?
Well, no, I don't think it's your imagination at all. I think it's a reality. I mean, certainly things have happened before, and we know more about what's happening now than we might have 30 years ago, simply because of technology. But I think we're reaching critical mass. Nothing is static. Our country's devolved, I think, to an extent that's kind of alarming.
Yeah, you've made mention here that you believe that Congress in its current form should be disbanded. I don't think many people would disagree with you. I think that's been conversation for a while, but now it seems like, what's the point of the way that it is?
Yeah, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing. I mean,
well, I think it's true.
I think so too. I think really what's happened is that Congress is, in essence, in many ways, disbanded itself.
Yes.
I mean, look, they look to the Supreme Court, they look to the executive to legislate, because they don't want to engage in legislation that they think might make them unpopular and unelectable. And so instead what they do is they feed us placebos. I think the current impeachment is an example of that. I think it's nonsense. We're so close to an election year. Let us decide who we want and who we don't want. We don't need Congress to decide that.
I guess, but yet in the Constitution, it says you're not supposed to do that. So would you not act upon it because it's an election year coming up?
Well, I'm not sure what we're acting upon. I think I think the real problem is that we're now using impeachment as a political tool instead of really addressing it in terms of the serious nature of what that really means. I think it's not only a question of this president, but I think it undermines the effectiveness of the presidency as an office if impeachment can be turned into a political tool, basically, to remove your opponent.
I suppose. Well, the removal isn't going to happen. It's simply that slap on the wrist that says, hey, you know, some of us didn't like what you did.
Sure. And then tens of millions of dollars later, what do we have?
Well, I guess the only thing is, I think there's something underlying that really is serious, and that's treason. And I believe that that's what's going on with himself leading the administration in that direction. And I think that is impeachable because that goes against our very structure, but that's not really what they went for, kind of.
No, it's not. I think there are other problems. I think the real mistake that we have all made, especially within the Beltway, is somehow claiming that Trump is the cause of something. I don't think he's the cause of anything. I think he's a symptom of the underlying problems that we have.
Correct.
He's one reaction. The other reaction we'll see is the gaining popularity of Sanders and people on the left. I think that's the problem. These people are symptomatic of something that's seriously wrong with the country that's driving people to polarize.
Do you believe that the country has become so polarized because of the party polarization that if there was a moderate, either a moderate Republican or moderate Democrat, that would be the way to go, but there doesn't seem to be that strong, like, oh my God, movement?
No, I, you know, it would be nice to think so. I mean, but if you take a look at the Republican field, for example, in the last presidential election, you did have moderates. I think the real problem is that, and we're not recognizing that, is that the middle class is a financial class, an economic class that's under assault. It's a shrinking class, and nobody's paid anything more than lip service to the notion that, you know, the guy that used to make, or the couple that used to make $60,000 a year with two kids used to be bang in the middle of the middle class. But the reality is, if you're making that kind of money and you're a family of four,
you're poor.
You're not in the middle class anymore because you can't even meet your needs. And I think that's what drives people. People are going, I can't make it anymore. And so they tend to polarize. They tend to look for answers outside of the moderates. And I think that's a real problem. And I think it's scary.
It is scary. And you've also stated that the next election will kind of tell the tale for the future.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it's, we're already starting to see it. The people coming to the forefront on the Democrat side tend to be more left-wing than they were traditionally. And then we have, you know, we still have Trump on the Republican side. And I think, he's a little bit, he's further to the right than we traditionally see. Now, I think he's pandering to the issues that are there. But he's not offering any real solutions. Unemployment is down. Yes, that's true. But wages haven't kept up with the cost of living.
Not at all. Because people are actually, they're in a worse boat than they were before.
Actually. Sure. And then we have this sort of nonsensical inflation indicator. But the reality is, for you and I,
absolutely,
is that inflation should be marked by what does my dollar buy today compared to what does my dollar buy next year.
Well,
the negative difference is the real rate of inflation. The rest is nonsense. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, Trump does his business by bankruptcy, and the country's bankrupt all the time, actually, in reality.
country's doing. He's a reflection of what the rest of the country is doing.
Correct.
The government is operating with a deficit that, most of us as individuals are operating in debt.
Right. Right. Yeah, so everybody is, so I guess it's familiar. I don't know, but the point is, and I think your point is, that someday things have to come to a head. All things do, and I guess it's going to be a harder fall the more we get to that head.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah. I think that's the problem, is where do we go from here? Yeah. I think the underlying problem is that we're not educated. We don't understand our system.
Correct.
And we have reached a point where rather than trying to gain self-sufficiency, we rely on the government to do everything for us. And, you know, it's the old adage that the golden rule is he who makes the gold makes the rules. And so government intrudes in our lives. They try to dictate how we should live almost in every aspect.
Correct.
But the onus is on us to turn around and say, look, I don't need you in my life unless it's dire circumstances. You take care of infrastructure, national defense. Leave me to my own devices.
It's interesting, you know, when you travel in circles of intellectual people, such as we're talking now, and I hope most of my listeners are as well, you get something out of it. Half the country doesn't even know what you're talking about. They're not up on it. They don't know anything. The number of people that come to me on a daily basis and say, so what's going on in the world, Ron? I don't know how to answer that. Like, what are you talking about? You don't know. You have no idea whatsoever. But yet that's a major chunk of the population in this country.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, I find it fascinating that we have accepted technological totalitarianism with a whimper. I mean, we're not even arguing against it, yet we have people all around the world who are protesting and fighting for their freedom, whether it's Hong Kong or whether it's in the Middle East or wherever. I mean, we've lost track of what that is. And I think the difference is that if you have a revolutionary change, you know from one day to the next what's been taken away from you. But in our system, we have evolved or devolved, if you like, from where we were to where we are today. And a great part of that is due to a lack of education, I think, in our schools. We don't even teach civics comprehensively anymore.
That's very true. That's absolutely true. You are originally from Canada, I understand.
I am. I'm a recovering Canadian.
Well, I hope it works out for you.
Well, it's worked out. I've been here a long time. I tell people that the reason I came is I was watching Saturday Night Live back in the day when they did the series, Blame It on Canada, and I left, and it wasn't until about 15 years later I realized they were joking.
Uh-oh. So, I mean, is this happening in other countries as well? Is America specific to what's going on? I know that England is going through stuff, but I mean, is this an international attitude?
Well, I think it is for democracies. I think this is the fundamental difference. I mean, we see totalitarian regimes and oligarchies like in Russia moving to the fore. I think democracies are starting to founder. Ours is more significant because of the role that we play in the world and because of the nature of our democracy, our republic. And we probably have the worst educational system in the developed world. And so I think our decline is more rapid and we're moving towards, I don't know what. I mean, in Europe, for example, they're at least fighting back against the collection of data and that kind of thing. We're not doing anything like that. We have government and industry working hand in hand to basically collect information about each and every one of us on a daily basis.
Well, yeah, but that's because if there was an administration that thought otherwise, it would be otherwise. I've always said that the most dangerous thing anywhere as far as the government is concerned is when you have a president who is there for the power. Power-hungry people at the top is a very, very dangerous thing.
Yeah, it goes a step further than that, though. I mean, imagine this. What does it do to democracy if you have bureaucrats who have unfettered access to information about everybody?
Correct.
Yeah. And then you have people running for office who odds are have something that they'd like not disclosed.
Right.
So you and I elect people into office, yet a bureaucrat may have information on them, and unless we think they're altruistic, then what's to prevent them from leveraging that information to have a specific politician do what they want them to do? I find that frightening.
Yeah. I think there should be a democratic law where you have to have three parties. I don't know. I mean, give us more than a choice of the roast beef or the chicken.
Well, the problem is they're a reflection of us.
Yes.
I mean, we can complain about the system, but the people in office are reflections of who we've become and our refusal to accept responsibility for ourselves. I mean, that's what it boils down to. When I immigrated into this country, there would have been a revolution had the government intruded and had private sector entities intruded into our lives as much as they have today.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a fascinating book. It is a book, by the way, that we've been talking about. we already mentioned that. It's a placebocracy.
Placebocracy.
Yep. Not easy to say. And Other Ailments, of which there are many. A Classical Liberal Take on America Today. It's Mark J. Hartwig. The book's available, I assume, on Amazon and everywhere else.
It's available at Amazon. It should be in the brick and mortar stores pretty soon. It just was out on January 7th.
Oh, congrats.
Anybody wants information, it's markjhartwig.com. Yeah.
Okay, Mark J. Hartwig, HARTWIG.com. Yeah. You can find out about the book. It's I can't imagine any piece of literature right now that would be more significant. So, yeah, thank you for your time today.
Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much, Ron.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Lengthy. That was lengthy. Interesting book, though, and certainly a topical topic. It's topical. It's a topical topic. Yeah, I don't think I agree with everything that he said. I really don't. I think there's a good and bad in this, and we'll see how this turns out. An election is the only thing that will tell the story. I'll tell you one thing. Whoever becomes the Democratic nominee for president, when it's just him and Trump, or her and Trump, or it and Trump, all the Democratic candidate has to do is just do a recap, make a demo tape. Just throw all the bullshit that Trump has put us through, all the stuff that he's concocted and manipulated, all the weird and ridiculous and harmful and embarrassing and democracy killing stuff that Trump has done. Put it all on a tape, play the tape. Don't say a word. Just remind everybody through the past 4 years what an asshole really acts like. And I think you got yourself an election won. That's just my opinion. Don't even waste your breath. Just remind everybody of all the bullshit that he's put us through. And I guarantee you that most people in this country, the overwhelming majority, electoral college or population-wise, are going to say, look, I've had enough of this. I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. All right. Have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful day. I hope not too many people sit near you. That's why I don't like to be on a bus. Too many people in it. There's people crammed into one place. It's the opposite of what I can handle. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be back tomorrow. Join me then.